There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Our media like to write sensationalist stories about drugs because it gets clicks, and that is what people want. You've got to understand the way that newspapers and journalists work is that, you know, it's always been the way that if you work for one of the big papers years ago, whatever it was at the time, and if you write a sensationalist story, you get a lot of hits or you sell a lot of newspapers. It's still that way. So they've got to go for that angle.
Tim Lovejoy is a podcasting elite, TV presenting legend, and just an all-round lovely guy. We have a really open conversation about mental health and drug reform and his process within that as well. So let's get straight into it. You're listening to Stop and Search on Scroobius Pips Distraction Pieces Network, brought to you by Acast in association with Leap. Here we go. Behind your barricade. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricade. Thank you so much for joining us. We recorded this conversation with Tim Lovejoy before lockdown, and I've held it back for various reasons, which I won't bore you with, but it's still relevant today. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. The fact that we had a conversation that was 3 years ago and it still holds up, is that an indictment of how far we haven't come? I don't know. But it's a fascinating conversation. We talk about the media. Of course we talk about the media. It's Tim Lovejoy. We talk about mental health. We talk about the need for outreach. And that's why Tim is so, so good within this. So the process of why this conversation came about is that Tim Lovejoy wasn't on board with this subject. He didn't understand drug law reform. He thought all drugs are bad, lock everybody up. But within the process of his own podcast, which is the Lovejoy Hour, which I so recommend because Tim has guests on there that purposely pick your interests and go for topics that you wouldn't ordinarily think about. And that's why he got involved in drug law reform. He had people like Peter Blexley, Neil Woods, Johan Hari, and then subsequently people like myself and Steve Rolls from Transform, and some other people coming up, I believe. And that process transformed Tim's thinking. He really, really is a deep thinker. And that's why he's so involved in drug law reform now and a friend to ours, because it's not good enough to talk about it. He wants to do more. And that's what we need. So if you agree with our conversations, like, share, subscribe, push this to people that wouldn't ordinarily listen. That's what we need to do. And that's why Tim's great within this. So without further ado, let's get on with it. And of course, you can find our work globally at Leap. So Leap Europe, Leap Scotland, Leap Netherlands, Leap Germany, Leap Australia, Leap UK, and of course, the head office, Leap in America, Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Find us all. But specifically, if you want to find us in the UK, then at UK Leap, which is our Twitter and Instagram, and ukleap.org is our Facebook and website. So without further ado, thank you so much, Tim Lovejoy. Let's get involved. It's quite a strange one how we've ended up here, because until fairly recently, you weren't remotely on board with this subject, were you?
No, you wouldn't have got me in here even maybe 5 months ago, so 6 months ago.
A pretty quick conversion.
Quick conversion, but it's quick because it makes so much sense. I mean, it's through doing my podcast that I've ended up here. Initially, shall I tell you the story?
Go for it. And name your podcast as well.
Oh, my podcast is called Dear Lovejoy. And it started off as an Agony Uncle podcast. And then I started interviewing interesting people and celebrities. And I interviewed Peter Blexley, who people will know from the, what's his show called?
Hunted.
That's it.
And, the and, Chief.
And, And he wrote so many great books and stuff, and he's such a great personality. So he came on my podcast, and then he'd written a book, so he came back onto the podcast, we invited back on. And towards the end, he sort of said about legalizing drugs. And I sort of thought, this guy's mental. He's got a TV profile, and he's discussing legalizing drugs. This is insane talk from someone who wants to work in television. Because obviously us working in TV, we've got to be cleaner than clean. Otherwise you lose your job. The papers get onto it and that's the end of your career. And I thought this is incredible. And he also was an ex-copper and everything else. And then people started tweeting me because they'd been on the podcast talking about Neil Woods, who's obviously your listeners will know him, but ex-undercover copper. And so I got him on the show, read his book, and just reading his book, though, War on Drugs, read that book, and I was like, I can't believe how I've been brainwashed the whole of my life to believe the stupidity and myths about drugs. And the stupidity about having them as being illegal in the first place. Anyway, Neil Woods came on, and it completely changed my mind. Then Johan Hari came on, who, as we all know, wrote a couple of great books, one called Connection and the other one Chasing the Scream. Yeah, and so we discussed with him about legalization of drugs or drug reform in every sense. And he was, again, like, it's madness, our drug laws at the moment. And it makes so much sense to me now that I spend the whole of my time boring people constantly and harassing MPs and everybody saying, come on, open your mind, follow UK Leap, see what's going on, because this is ridiculous. It's one of the biggest problems in the world. And we've been brainwashed to believe in something which is total myth.
See, that's exactly what we want to hear, because normally, you can have these conversations and people can be a bit, they can be in a bit of a malaise about it. Like, oh, it's drugs, drugs are drugs. But to have that conversion and to see you go through that conversion, that's everything that we want. And was it reading the books that got you in that process of transforming of how you perceived it?
Yeah, 100%. I've got to just say at this point, though, doing my podcast opened my mind up to so many other things. It's opened my mind up to the education system in this country and how mental that is. We're separating kids we wonder why our society's bizarre, yet we separate our kids through finance or wealth and religion and sex and all sorts of different other things rather than lumping them all in the same school. We're one of the few countries which do this, by the way. Us and America do it. Germany and Scandinavia, you go to the local school, whether you're rich, poor, or Muslim, Christian, Jew, whatever, you'll go to the same school. So we are, as British people, growing up with complete brainwashing of various different subjects. And this one, though, is the one which had the major impact on me, because it's so nonsensical that this stuff is illegal. For all the reasons, as I'm sure your listeners have heard loads of times.
Well, let's get into it, though, because the reasons are quite nuanced and not everybody is going to know all of them. So what were the points that especially resonated with you?
Well, the biggest one is actually the points have developed since I've been going on. Right, let's start with if drugs are illegal, it becomes an illegal activity. As soon as it's an illegal activity, it has to involve violence. It's putting more and more violence on our streets. Bizarrely, just before I did the interview with Neil Woods, I was interviewing Ross Kemp about whether police should be armed. All police should be armed. Our country is a beautiful country where we've got coppers with truncheons and pepper spray or whatever they have these days and a set of handcuffs. Now we're thinking about giving them guns. The reason why we're giving them guns is it's getting more violent on the streets. The reason why it's getting more violent on the streets is because drugs is prevalent out there, it seems, and the gang warfare going on. They have to get more violent, because as Neil and Johan and Peter will tell you, you can't go to the coppers if someone steals your stash. You have to protect yourself. So it just gets more and more violent, and the violence is increasing rapidly on the streets, and we're doing nothing about it. If we kind of think about reform and legalization, it depowers them. Suddenly, if you can get all your stuff legally, you're not going to start going to the dodgy guy, at the end of the road. So that's sort of the main reason that I think it makes so much sense for drug reform.
So what order did you have the guests on? So Neil Woods, who wrote...
No, Peter first. Peter came on, and I thought, you're talking absolute...
So he was the one that planted the seeds.
Madness that you think we should legalize. And I was going, all drugs should be legal. He's going, yeah. And he's going, what? This is just madness. And he's going, well, yeah, well, it's reform. And then Neil came on to explain it all. And he was fantastic. Neil's such a great person, actually. And Neil looks like he's been through the mill. And what you don't understand about Neil maybe is why he's so good is he's been on the other side of it. He's been the guy, you know, actually putting these criminals away. And as I think if you look in his eyes, he's been putting people away who aren't criminals in his mind. And that's what's really hard for him to see. And then Johan Hari comes on later and just sort of the icing on the cake just goes, oh, yeah, I mean, it's simple, you know. And I don't know how much Johan Hari has to do with the UK Leap organisation.
Yeah, we're good friends. He's been on his podcast twice. We did his first book, Chasing the Scream, and then we did Lost Connections after that. And then just to go over Neil Woods, just I've got to do the plugs. So for Neil Woods and J.S. Raffaelli, the authors, Drug Wars, and his first book, Good Cop, Bad War. So please, those links will be scrolling, along with Tim Lovejoy's podcast links, they'll be scrolling if you listen on your Cast app.
By the way, all those books are incredible reads, and you have to read them. It's really important.
Genuinely so. They, even if you haven't got an interest in this subject, I don't know if you'd agree.
How would you not have an interest in this subject when our streets are littered with crime and violence? And also, you know, so let me tell you about another couple of points that have made me slightly angry, is the fact that... I had a brain surgeon on my podcast. I interview all sorts of different people. Rao Jundiel, he's one of the leading brain surgeons in the world. We start talking about depression. Then he says, there's been some really interesting experiments where people are spraying ketamine up their noses, but clearly ketamine's sort of illegal, but they've been doing this experiment. And so I go into talking to him about psychedelics and MDMA, and he goes, yeah, they're all really good. You know, these are all stuff we should use. And I said, well, why can't we? I mean, he's American. And I was saying, you know, what about the legalization? He goes, he sort of implied that they would love to be able to use these substances, you know. Then you've got the medical marijuana or cannabis, as we all know, that people want to use. And how on earth we're still keeping that illegal is just beyond me when people can actually use it for health benefits. So it's not only that I think people always think of drugs as recreational. They always think of drugs as addicts, and they always think of addicts as bad people. I don't think Johan Hari is the one who made me think that addiction's not they're not bad people who are addicted. They should be treated with sympathy and helped rather than locked in prison. It's a bloody ridiculous idea, really. And so there's sort of many different nuances to why I think. And the final thing that I think, which is the one that really grates me, and it's only started grating me recently. I've mentioned this to you, Jason, before on the phone, but the fact that I'm not allowed to take them, the fact that I've been brainwashed since I was a young kid to think that alcohol and tobacco is fine. Well, actually, then later on in my life, tobacco became like something which is, you know, no one could do, even though I became addicted to nicotine for a while and, you know, gave that 18 odd years ago or something. So I'm allowed to smoke and I'm allowed to drink and I'm allowed to drink hardcore vodka, 40% vodka if I want. I can drink as much as I want, you know, of that. I can do tequila shots. I can swig strong lager. They let me do whatever I want on that side. But they say, no, there's a certain section of drugs that you're not allowed to touch. And because I'm a TV presenter, I've pretty much not touched them. Okay, because when I was a kid, I did a bit. But as soon as I was on TV, not a chance. Because I do not want to get caught doing any form of drugs. You would just lose your job immediately. I think it's getting a bit less now. If you look at someone like Richard Bacon, went out, did a line of coke, lost his career, fantastically managed to get it back, but lost his job. Happened to all of them. Anyone found doing any form of drugs, you know, that's it. Your career's gone. Who's deciding which drug I can take and which drug I can't take? And that's a bit which has really started to grate me over the years, because as far as I can work out, and I'm not an expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, alcohol seems to be one of the worst ones. I know nicotine or tobacco is just a horrific drug because it's, I don't know which is the bit which is killing me when I was smoking, but that doesn't end well if you're a smoker. Alcohol, if you're doing it in excess, does not end well, you know. And we're encouraged in our culture to binge drink, by the way. They allow us to do that, and they, you know, and they'll do, we're allowed to sell it cheaply, we're allowed to do, you know, supermarket discounts and all that sort of stuff. And it's allowed to be marketed heavily at us, alcohol as well. Now, who's deciding that that's right? And MDMA, which I've never taken, but I understand it's really nice, cannabis, ecstasy and MDMA are similar, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know, basically the same
thing.
But psilocybin.
Psilocybin as well, which, you know, I've suffered from depression. I don't like to say suffered anymore, by the way, but I've had depression. And I've contemplated going to Amsterdam to go to the clinics. Why can't I do it over here? Why can't I get pure stuff as well? Who's deciding what I can and what I can't have? And it just doesn't seem to make any sense at all.
And it's a conversation we don't often have, is that we're so ingrained into what the drug laws have set out for us, that, you know, all drugs are bad, don't take them, that we forget it has taken away our autonomy over it. No longer have we got sovereignty over our own body because of what the laws of the state has said. No, you can do that, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
And yet we don't really address that with the severity that we probably should.
Well, interestingly, I don't have an agent at the moment. But if I did have one, I bet they'd have said, "Don't do this."
Yeah,
because it's just like there's no benefit really, apart from I'm desperate to help drug reform. So as many people who can listen to this, as you know, as soon as this is out, I'm retweeting it because I want as many people as possible to start listening to the arguments. I keep, you know, tweeting MPs and talking to everybody I can talk to about it. But at the moment, it's still stuck. I mean, you just had the stuff with Gove, who's, you know, and everyone had to come out and say drugs are evil. Half the population are evil and criminals because most of us have tried something illegal, so we've criminalized the whole of our population because humans kind of like trying it, you know, and they quite like taking drugs, and we like drinking, and we like, you know, smoking, and we like probably taking acid. I don't know, because I've never tried it, but I'd like to try it, but I'd like to know what I'm taking. Yeah, that's the thing. I would like someone to go to me, right, so you've got a bit of depression, you know, why don't you just try this? And we know it's a nice low dose. I don't know what I'm taking if I'm buying off some bloke in the corner of the street. So, you know, it's ludicrous stuff. But yeah, as I say, being in the media, we're going to struggle until we get more people like me to cross over and go, come on, let's listen to the arguments here. Let's listen to it. But people won't touch it because we're so brainwashed into the idea that all drugs are evil.
You make a perfect point there, and this is something that is opening up the kind of the magician's curtain a little bit. But you're right, if you've got an agent, and I'm having to go through agents to get people like you on this podcast, it just never happens because there's nothing in it for you, you know, not getting a fee, but also why do you want to put yourself out there talking about what's conceived as contentious subjects for no gain for yourself?
Yeah, and then what's the bizarre thing about this? I get, you know, obviously I'm on TV, so I get asked to do charity constantly. And, you know, I do my bits for charity, generally cancer charities and things, because my brother died of cancer. But it's, what's fascinating about this is, you know, I'm willing to lend my name to this because I think it's just so important. I mean, we're watching the crime rate on the streets. I mean, when you say to Neil or you say to Peter or Johan or one of those guys, you say, is all the stabbing connected? You know, all those people dying. You go, yeah, of course, because the level of violence is going up and up and up. Why is the level of violence going up? Because you got to get more violent if you want to control the drugs. The amount of news, every time you open up the newspaper now, there's more stories on the horrific stuff going on in the drug world. And we need reform to stop that. That's the only way it's going to stop. Otherwise, why is it going to stop?
Do you think that there are other people in your position that have got a voice that would start lending itself to this? Because it's, you know, like you said, if you're talking about cancer charities or something of that ilk, there's no harm that can come of it for the individual that's advocating. But something that's a political issue that involves reform on something that could be conceived as contentious, it doesn't attract people in the same context that what those other charities do. So do you think there is any chance we can get more public figures over to this and go, look, let's sort this out?
Wow. I think it's going to be tough. I mean, even when I talk to politicians, they should be politically engaged in this and understand the arguments, you know, and look into them. But even when I, you know, they're all very wary of the subject. It's become such a dark cloud in the world. You know, because we've all seen all those, we've been brainwashed with the idea that everything about drugs is evil. It's the evil that's on our planet. Yet, as I keep repeating, we're allowed to do alcohol. You know, we're allowed to be drinking a beer, playing football on the beach. We're allowed to do that. But any other sort of drug, we're not allowed to touch. And so it's such a dark cloud over that. I think it's we've got a long way to move. Interesting for me, you know, it's one conversation with Peter Blexley where I've thought, he's nuts. What is he talking about? That has just completely changed my mind. And it was good, so fantastically, whoever it was, the people who tweeted me about Neil Woods and said, read his book and stuff, whoever that was fantastic, because I just thought, well, I need to read about this. I'm inquisitive though. And I think I like all these sort of things. You know, if you listen to my podcast, you'll know I'm obsessive about learning new things. I'm excited about life and the world. And so I think it's interesting. But I think it's going to be a tough ask to get people to come across.
And it's, do you think the media has a responsibility? Because it's, I mean, the classic example at the moment is that we're sat in releases offices in London, and next to you is a pack of playing cards that have got politicians that have got their drug confessions on it. And it's quite funny. And it's the same ilk and the same theme as what's been going on in the Conservative leadership at the moment with, and you mentioned it, Tim, that all of these politicians that have come forward and said, look, I've used drugs, but don't make the same mistake I've had, or the same mistake I've done. Do you reckon that in itself is just we're constantly framing drugs in terms of bad and good? And as you said, the what's the name of the neurosurgeon you had on?
Rahul Chandia.
As he said, you know, the drugs aren't good or bad. They've just got an effect on the body in some way, shape or form. You mentioned and you alluded to it, and I've gone all around the houses on this, but you feel cheated that you've not had the chance to try these drugs. Do you think there are going to be other people that are going to resonate with that same argument of going, actually, I could derive some benefit from these?
Well, I only feel cheated that we've either got to go, right, tequila's banned as well, and vodka. Then it's, you know, if it's a level playing field, then I'm all right with it. If we go, right, it's bad for our society. I mean, I don't want this society, by the way. I would hate this society. But it's bad for our society, so vodka, tequila, alcohol, it's all banned, right? None of you can do anything, you know? We don't want you to touch that. No cigarettes, no cigars, none of that. Then I'm fine with it. But you can't have, like, the idea that some of these drugs are okay for you and some of them aren't. When it's basically been... I think the myth has been perpetrated by a lot of the media as well. And the politicians, I mean, the problem with the political system, I don't want to get stuck into politics too much here because I'd be slightly out of my depth, but it's just a big, huge power game and a popularity game. And they've got to get the press on their side. And the press like to get hits. They like to get, you know, they like to get clicks. So they'll just invent a new drug the next minute, or, you know, whatever, we've got the latest one and it shocks us, and so we'll go, oh, it's terrible, all our kids are dying of whatever the next one is, you know. And it's constantly, they're fueling this myth about drugs. There's very few people, I imagine, who want to write the article about how we could use MDMA to help with depression or for other mental health issues, you know, any form of mental health issues or psychedelics, or, you know, and there's the one that I don't think anyone in the one that has really come a long way, which I don't think anyone is doubting, is cannabis. Like, I mean, I think if you went out on the street now to a lot of people and said, should cannabis be legalized? I think everybody, I think there'd be a big majority say, yeah, now, don't you?
Yeah, I think we got there on that. I think the PR campaigns over the last 20 years, I think, and PR campaign sounds weird because it's almost sounds skeptical, but it's just what you have to do. You have to highlight these different issues, other than the fact that it's always been stigmatized as being associated with bad mental health. But we know so many people with PTSD that do derive benefit from cannabis and MDMA. But thankfully now, because of mediums like this, podcasting, and being able to have a direct link with people like you, we're managing to get those messages out there.
I sort of end up though on Twitter a lot, getting involved in Twitter spats about this. And I try not to, because my knowledge isn't amazing. It's just, I know what I know now. And so I'm watching UK Leap and Neil and everybody, you know, trying to educate people. But you can just see people are so, that always the same response. If you knew what I knew, if you'd seen what I'd seen, you wouldn't be saying legalized drugs. If you knew. And then all the arguments Neil and UK Leap and everything come up with on Twitter to say, look, here are the facts. It's like, no. I know my facts. My facts are, they're disgusting. They've got to be illegal. And you're like, as Johan Harry points out, it's like you if you read his book, and I think he's got some good points, addiction is generally because you've got a bad life, not because you've got addicted to the substance. That's his, you know, that's his big point he makes. The substance, there is a bit of chemical addiction, but a lot of it is because you need your life fixed. And so the concept is you don't get addicts, you lock them in prison, you get addicts to say, can we help you? And that's the, and to me, that makes perfect sense.
It's environmental. Everything is cause and effect. And if you have, a lot of times we find addictions because of childhood trauma. It's, we know so many people that have been through the mill, and yet they go into a route of self-soothing, and then we criminalize them again. So it's just this hideous process when you strip it down of, we're knocking people down so many times because of what our drug laws are doing. And I don't think people are realizing that.
And where we got there was before we were born, with America forcing us into doing it. We didn't want to make drugs illegal in this country, by the way. America forced us into it, and forced South America into it. And also our media like to write sensationalist stories about drugs because it gets clicks, and that is what people want. You've got to understand the way that newspapers and journalists work is that, you know, it's always been the way. If you work for one of the big papers years ago, whatever it was at the time, Times, Mail, Sun, Mirror, whatever, if you write a sensationalist story, you get a lot of hits, or you sell a lot of newspapers. It's still that way. So they've got to go for that angle. And it's a good, easy story, you know, that kids are ripping their faces off or jumping off buildings, or it's always a good clicker. It's clickable, you know, nowadays clickable. I'm talking about, but it's always a saleable story. So with the help of the media fueling it, and we all sit there like I do. I mean, I'm 100% brainwashed this, like the next person, aghast. And you know, always the argument is, you go, but you know, not all kids are going to do that on these drugs. They're always, the argument is, you tell the parents of the ones who have died that, and it's you know, it's emotive stuff, and it's hard to argue against that. However, the same is happening with alcohol. And we're marketing that constantly at ourselves, aren't we?
And as you said, the good example is Richard Bacon, because I've loosely spoken to Richard over this, because I think it was about 6 months ago, he put a story out about cocaine use and how, I can't remember exactly what the specific word, but I think it was something along the lines of people with ADHD gravitate towards cocaine use because of the, you know, the kind of what it does and the symbolism. But you're right, is that it's always been used as that salacious story, that clickbait, that scandal, whether it's a sex scandal or a drug scandal. Do you reckon that is going to potentially lessen? Do you think we can get out of that cycle?
I reckon if I got caught with doing coke now, what a bizarre thing to say, got caught doing. My mind has changed so much in 6 months, I can't tell you. It's like really weird. Like, if I got caught doing coke, so what? It's my body, I want to do what I want, but I know it's illegal. The real difference between Richard Bacon and me, and a lot of people in my entertainment industry, they hide away doing drugs. I made the decision that I didn't want to do that, so I just don't take them. So it's really easy for me to come on here and say, reform drugs, because I don't do them. I'm not saying I wouldn't do them if they're reformed, but I just don't touch them. So I've got no, you know, dog in the race here. I don't give a shit whether they are or aren't, apart from I do, because it makes perfect sense. Prohibition never worked in America. It never worked, right? Al Capone, it just is bullshit. And then we're still doing it. How are we still doing it now when we know it doesn't work? It's so stupid that we're doing that. But from a person who works in the entertainment industry, I think if I got caught now, I'm not sure I would lose my job, probably, because probably the press would think this is clickable and think it, but it's getting lesser and lesser. I mean, when Richard got caught years ago, it was just like, that was it. No, there's no way back. But when you've got people running for prime minister of the country going, okay, I've done coke, and then not having to immediately pull out of the race, which he didn't, you know, and they're all saying, oh, I might have done a bit as well. You know, anyone in the room, anyone in Parliament who hasn't done it, put their hand up, no hands go up. You know, they've all been at it. They've all had a little dabble in something or other. And it's like, you know, so I think the moods are slowly changing. It would be good if more people like me came across and started doing it. But all they've got to do is do their research. It's so obvious once you do.
And do you think that with the politicians that have admitted, and this is obviously going to be a leading question, but bearing in mind they've come out and said, look, I've used these substances in the past, and then they're going to be the next lawmakers and policymakers. How can they justify maintaining criminalisation and prohibition all the while that they've had a past maybe even a prison.
Well, they need to stick themselves in prison, don't they, for a while? Or give themselves a criminal record. And once they've got their conviction for drugs, they can't go to America, can they? And then they can't. So they need to give themselves... Gove needs to make sure he goes to the police, hands himself in, gets his criminal record. That's what they should all be doing now if they want to... Or we could be all sensible here and go, can we have a conversation about this, right? Let's do it slowly. Let's take 5 to 10 years to do it, but let's really go. Like, that's quite swift, I suppose, in the great scheme of things of how long it's been illegal. But let's just look at all the ways we can do it, and let's move it in the right direction and slowly start opening up. The problem is everyone always says the same stuff, which is, if you smoke cannabis, it's a gateway to heroin. I mean, I think that's bullshit. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I think...
There is absolutely no link whatsoever.
No link, okay.
It's a cause and effect, is that if you're... Chances are you're not trying heroin first, so there's going to be a natural gate system. But to suggest that the gateway theory stands up because you've consumed cannabis and that's got you to heroin, that the evidence just doesn't support that. Have you, and this is going to be really cheeky of me, but are you on Amazon Prime at the moment, by chance? If you go on there, there's a film called The Culture High, which I'm an associate producer of, and we go into the gateway theory quite substantially on that. And he's writing it down, blimey. And also, there's another one I've got to say as well, there's another one on there called Grassroots, which is a look at the domestic side of campaigning as well. The Culture High is the one that we got in line for an Oscar for, so it was quite fortunate on that. I'm going to have to edit that out because it makes me sound a complete wanker.
Don't worry about it. It's good. No, as much promotion as you can. Now, this subject needs to be opened up to as many people as we can possibly
see. That's why we love you, is because we have these conversations with people in the public eye. And some of them quietly agree with us. Some of them go, yeah, we support what you're doing. And then we'll walk off and go, oh, no, but you've got to be the voices for it. But the thing is that we're not necessarily the experts either. It just so happens that the voices in Leap have had to police this very policy that we know is failing. And I've got my own background, which is I've spoken about. But you've championed this issue like no other that we've come across. And do you think that from your point of view, have you had those conversations in your own circles as well as in the public eye?
Yeah, and everyone thinks I'm mental.
Is it still at that point?
Yeah, I go, we need to legalise drugs. They go, oh, that's a ridiculous idea. And I said, come on, we need drug reform. This is, you know, and I go through all the reasons and they all look at me as though I've absolutely lost the plot. We've been brainwashed so much. I mean, it's like I'm an alien talking to them because they can get cannabis. They can understand that, but anything else they think is completely nuts. And the idea that someone who's on heroin is not an evil, disgusting criminal is so strange in their mind. Rather than being sort of someone who needs help, they're like, they're disgusting, they don't want to work, they're horrible people. It's like, you never know, they might have come from a very bad background and this is a way out for them. And it's like, no. It's just basically, no, the estates in Scotland, they're all, you know, got heroin addicts everywhere and because they just don't want to work. And I was like, no, it's not like that. But I felt the same way. And I think everybody we've all been brainwashed the same way. But, you know, I'm in a very fortunate position as I'm doing podcasting and I'm speaking to a lot of influential people and intelligent people who know about the subject matter. And just to sit across from Neil Woods is one of the most emotional experiences I've had, looking in his eyes as he's explaining how bad his job was. He's in the police. He was in the police doing what he thought was right. And he now realizes it's so wrong. Not his fault. Doesn't make him a bad person, as I was trying to, you know, say at the end of the podcast. But, if you listen to the podcast right at the end, it's really emotional. And I'm a crap broadcaster at the end because I push him on it. And then he put a guy away who thought Neil was one of his best friends because he was, you know, undercover. And you could just see the emotions in Neil's face. It's like, this is a guy who'd done nothing wrong, particularly in the world, and yet Neil's sort of trying to ruin his life because of our drug policies, our drug laws. It's for vulnerable people, basically. And this is the thing about drugs, I think, and the industries at the moment. It's all these people are being affected and harmed a lot of them are vulnerable people. They're the people that our society should be protecting. But those kids going around now, you know, who are traveling up and down the country, being put in by gangs all over the country to sell drugs, they're vulnerable. They're kids and they're vulnerable. And they're being used because they're kids. You know, vulnerable people end up going into the gangs and going into drug dealing and all that sort of stuff. And so we should be protecting those people. And one of the easiest ways to protect it is to take the industry away.
I'm going to get a little bit kind of news of the world tabloid on you now. In that, have you seen much from your quite unique position of being involved in the media? Have you seen much, and I'm not asking for details, obviously, but have you seen much in the way of partying and certain drug takings and things like that?
What, amongst the celebrity circuit?
Yeah.
Have I seen a lot of that?
Obviously, you don't have to go into any
detail.
Well,
do you know what? It's prolific in all clubs culture, isn't it? So it's not just celebrity. It's any clubs culture. I've been around it. Yeah, all my life I've been around it. Like everyone. Who hasn't? As long as you're going out to clubs and bars and whatever else, there's plenty of people doing lots of drugs. I go to Glastonbury, have done for years and years. There's always people doing it there. A couple of my friends laugh at me because I'm the only one who's not on something at Glastonbury, but I can't afford to do it because I'd lose my job. So it's like, I just don't want to take the risk. I love my job. I love my job so much. And I really do. Do you know what? I'm also, you know, I don't want to come across just the sort of cleanest sort of most intelligent guy here because I'm the guy who's never going to... I'm also scared stiff because if I was to take something that would hurt me, and I always think you're playing Russian roulette, really. You know, I love the idea that you can go and get your drugs tested at festivals. I've got two 17-year-old daughters. Now, they tell me they're not taking drugs. However, they're 17, they're twins, and they started to go out, and they say there's a lot of drugs around. There's a lot of drugs around our children. We know that, more than when I was growing up. When I was growing up to begin with, it was just before the rave culture. So everyone was just drinking, and there was a bit of speed. That was it, you know, and the speed was taken by the sort of guys with Mohicans and quiffs and stuff who were going to watch King Kurt and all that sort of stuff. And the rest of us were just getting drunk. Then the acid house culture came along and, you know, the rave culture came along, and then drugs just became prolific everywhere. With my kids, drugs are everywhere, all of them, constantly. They live in London and they go out in those sort of circles. They tell me they're not doing it, but I'd rather if they were doing it, they were stuff that was clean, that wasn't cut with crap. I think the idea is, sorry, I'm going talking around here, but as I said just before, the idea that you could go to a festival and get your drugs tested to make sure it's clean or is okay to take, I think is a fantastic idea, really good idea.
And that's the services of the Loop, which we can't recommend enough. You know, you can do that if they're there at a festival or a night spot, go along, get your drugs tested. They'll give you titration advice as well on how you can safely do it and the right ways of doing it. But that must be a concern.
Can I just point out there, here, because I'm not sitting here saying everyone should go and take ecstasy and MDMA and coke and do all that sort of stuff. You know, I'm not saying that. If you're going to go out and do 10 vodka shots tonight or tequila shots, it's a shit idea, right? It's a crap idea to binge drink. We all do it. I do it. I admit I do it. I drink. I don't drink as much as I used to, but I do it and I enjoy it. But I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm not saying smoking cigarettes is a really, really bad idea. Don't do it. If you're smoking, unless it's for medical purposes, if you're smoking cannabis every day, I don't think that's a good idea. Don't do it. If you're drinking every day, don't do it. If you're doing drugs every day, don't do it. It's a bad idea. It's a good idea to be sober. It's a really good idea to be sober. But it's a good idea that it's your decision. That's what's perfect. A good idea.
And a lot of it as well, as you said, it's not about the drugs, it's about behavioural patterns. So a lot of times eating disorders roll into this as well, because it's exactly the same coin, just different size.
Yeah, and I would say if you're gambling, if you're overeating, if you're taking heroin, if you're chain smoking fags constantly 40 a day, if you're doing over drinking, if you're popping pills constantly, if you're taking painkillers all the time, I'll go and see a shrink. Because I imagine there's more to it than just numbing pains of any descriptions. I imagine you could probably do with, you know, the reason why I started my podcast was because I wasn't feeling well mentally. And I just ended up reading because I don't do anything. I didn't take antidepressants and I didn't I bizarrely just stop drinking immediately as soon as I start getting, when I get a sniff of depression, I stop, because I know that drug's terrible for depression. It just times it all by 100, you know, and then you have to keep going because that's the only way to do it. So I just stopped drinking and stuff, and I just started reading a lot. And then I ended up going, like, me and my friend said, should we do a podcast? And I said, yeah. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll do an Agony Uncle, because I know so much. I've read so many self-help books, desperately trying to work out why my life was sort of broken. I'm getting there now. And I don't see depression as a, I talk about this a lot. I don't see I used it earlier on the podcast and I regret it. I didn't suffer from depression. I had depression. There are chemical imbalances, I understand that, but the depression I have, I think, is a broken life and thought processes. They're the two things. So I had to fix my life, and you've got to analyze your life. I live in a really fake world of TV, and it's very strange. It's kind of, the 3 hours I'm on TV is like surreal. It's the best life in the world ever, and I love it and I adore it. And then the rest of my life I'm like, well, what is that then? I want to be that person constantly. Oh god, I've got to be the normal Tim Lovejoy. God, that's really dull. But also we're fired up in what's success, you know. It's funny, on my podcast, I've had various people who've made a comment to me. Will Storr said to me, do you see yourself as, he's a journalist who wrote a good book called Selfie, which is about how we, the self-esteem movement. He said, do you see yourself as successful? And I went, no. And he went, it's so bizarre, because everybody else will look at you, Tim, and go, right, you've been on TV for 20 something years. You know, you've had TV shows, Soccer AM, Sunday Brunch. But I still don't see myself as, he goes, we're all suffering from this. We're all going around with these weird thoughts in our head about what success is. And then we've got bad thought process and we've got bad lives. We maybe want material things. You know, I read a lot of Buddhism when I was feeling low. But yeah, all these things, I can't remember the point I was making now, but what point was I making?
I don't know, but I really want to draw upon something you said there, because it's always something that's interested me, is do you think fame can be a bit of a drug in its own right?
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. You see why famous people will get addicted, because the highs are so high and then it's tough to go back to the lows. The worst thing ever is if you're in a band. I used to tour with bands flogging T-shirts, and their highs are amazing. They're going on, they've got security, right? And they've got their catering put on for them, and they've got, you know, the travel sorted, and they've, you know, they're riders, and they got on stage and they've got the adulation of all these people, and they're like, yeah, look at all this. And every night they come out, they do an encore, and everyone wants a piece of them and they absolutely love it. You know, I was the swag man flogging the T-shirts. I'm watching the money pour in. It's absolutely huge as the money's pouring into this pod, to the gig and to the band or the artist. Then the week after their gig stops, that's it. They got to start again. They got to find new material, and they've also, no one cares, but they do care. But it's like they're not going on the stage every night. That it's gone, and they find, how do I find that high? And so I do. You know, I don't want to feel sorry for rock stars, but but the highs are high and the lows are low. Whereas I'm just going to think of a job here. I'll say milkman, because there's not many of them are left. If you're a milkman, you just go out every day in your electric thing and you put milk down. Your highs aren't probably high. Your lows aren't low. Whereas rock star highs and lows, huge sweeping highs and lows.
Small glimpse that I've had behind the curtain by doing this and various in the film is that you see how fame can certainly lead you down those destructive paths, because you're invited to the premieres and this, that and the other, and everything's laid on for you, as you said. And then if it starts to fade away, then where do you go from there? And you can see why, certainly with potentially vulnerable people that are reality TV stars, there's a lot of people that are quite self-destructive in those reasons.
If you're going to be, a wise man once said, if you're going to be famous, make sure you're proud of what you're famous for. And I do think, feel sorry for the reality TV stars, because it's a modern phenomena, but they're going on TV and they haven't got a talent. They're just them. They become very famous very quickly. Then they come out of, say, let's talk Love Island, because it's on at the moment when I'm talking to you about this. They come out, they're going to be worth, I'm actually interviewing someone on my podcast who is one of the people who funds influencers. She's coming on soon to say how they make their money. I'm intrigued by it all. So they come out and they can make apparently like 1 to 3 million quid if they're one of the good ones. So that's a huge thing. But they also have to have excessive trolling. every single bit of their body and their looks and everything is absolute, especially with the women, is absolutely hammered by people. And it's quite a tough thing. You know, and people don't quite get this. The people who slag me off, they're not slagging me off. They're just, they are who they are. They go, Lovejoy, you're a bleep. And it's like, yeah, in your life I am, because I'm, in your mind, you don't know who I am. In your mind, you think I'm successful and I've got everything and you haven't, and you hate me. And I get it. I get why you hate me. But every now and then I get caught out and I get, the rage hits me again. It's like, why are you talking about me like that? You know, it's quite a tough thing to do, but I've been doing it for 20 years and I was the producer of Soccer M. So I used to read the mail, which came in. I'll tell you a good story here. There was a time where, when I was on Soccer M, which was Sky TV, and people forget email was kind of a modern thing once upon a time ago. And there was a way you could set up an email account and use your remote control to do emails. And we used to put the email address out, so you didn't need people forget this, but there was a time when not everyone had a computer, right? Laptops weren't around. You had to go and buy a desk computer type scenario, and then laptops came in. But Sky had done this thing, so you could set up an email account, and then you could email by doing your on your remote control. And there was this kind of couple of weeks, two or three weeks, I was getting, can I swear on this or not? Lovejoy, you're a wanker, or I loved you, you stupid tosser, or whatever, Chelsea rent boy, whatever it was, you know. And I used to think, oh my God, this is really bad. But it was only one line or something. And I was like, God, I'm getting real bad hate mail. What happened? And then I put two and two together because it stopped. It was people managed to set themselves up email. What should I do with my email account? I know, I'll slag off the guy on telly. Such a British thing to do. We'll have a pop of that Chelsea wanker on TV. So, okay. But then it stopped because it was so hard to do. You know, it died. I don't know if anyone is still emailing via their remote control on their Sky, but it's like that. And so what people do, they sit at home and then the reality stars come off and they just hammer them, and it's tough to accept that. Yeah, it really is.
It is a tough industry that you're in, because you're constantly subject to scrutiny one way or another.
I can't, yeah, but you can switch it off, so I don't think it's that tough, if I'm honest. If you're smart, you can just switch it off and go, I'm not reading it, and just don't. So that's more of what I've been doing recently, is switching it off and just not engaging in it. I mean, there's so much noise out there, you know, who's bullying who in Love Island and what's going on here, and you know, and there's so much stuff. But interestingly, I think a lot of the news at the moment around in our country is featured around drugs and drug reform. I think it's such a big thing, not in our country but in the world as well. If you legalize drugs, how does the world change? If you reform drugs now, that's another thing to think about. South America loves it, right? If you do drug reform, suddenly they become, rather than having kids killed everywhere constantly, or their people die, I imagine they suddenly become a big legal industry and start making money for their countries too. So that's it. The Middle East, the atmosphere changes there. The environment, the landscape changes dramatically in the Middle East, because suddenly all that illegal, or the illegal opium and stuff over there, suddenly becomes legal, and people go, right, we need to deal now because we need to try and make this into a business. So the landscape there changes, and I suppose the landscape changes in Amsterdam and places like that as well. I don't know. I think, and over here, we make quite a lot of cannabis-y type things over
here. Yeah, we're the leading growers and distributors of it, but no one's got access to it. So, And ironically, it's right on my doorstep. I'm not going to reveal where I live, but it's right there. So you can see the Willy Wonka chimneys from where I live. It's bizarre. But you're right, is that Afghanistan is a good example. We've got one of our members in Leet UK, Patrick Hennessy. He was a officer that was charged with policing the poppy fields. So you use a really good example there of just how sprawling this issue is internationally, from the domestic streets where we're filming it, or where we're recording in London at the moment, all the way to South America with the coca plant, to Afghanistan and the Middle East with poppies. It's just all there for us. And yet, you mentioned your parents' generation that, yeah, probably are the ones that are most apathetic to this. Do you think that between what you've mentioned with your parents' generation and your children's generation, is it more likely that this new crop is going to get it, do you think?
Oh, my children are so politically engaged, it's ridiculous, and they're so on board with this. I've sat down and badgered them about it and talked. And they do, my kids do politics club and things. So they take it into there all the time, and they're reading the books and they're really engaged with it all. So they're really into the idea of drug reform. So
can you do a movie night with them?
So yeah, all right, I'll get them to watch that. Yeah, so they're getting.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And my parents' generation would like it if what happened in Switzerland, which is the legalization of heroin, the heroin clinics brought the crime down. As soon as you can get the crime down, my parents will be engaged. And as long as you can see that the people are coming off the drug rather than going on it, which is what always happens with these things once you do the drug reform, then I think they would be engaged with it. The other thing we haven't mentioned here, though, and I think this is one of the aspects that we need to sell to my parents too, is how much we're spending on policing this and how much of their taxes, my parents are retired now, but how much of our taxes are going onto policing this stuff. The police don't want to get involved. The amount of people in prison because of this, I mean, get rid of it all. And then, you could just bring all the prices down, and then obviously there'd be tax revenue, I assume, on the drug sales, so that'll go up and we'll be able to get that sort of stuff. We'll be able to get the nation healthier, bizarrely, I believe, even though people will think it's the other way around. I believe in what you lot are telling me anyway, that I think the nation would be a healthier nation because we'd be able to help all the addicts out.
There's quite a rudimentary figure that I quite often use. It's from a good 8 years ago now, and it's from an organisation called UKDBC. And it basically condensed down what each taxpayer is paying in regards to drug policy. And it works out, and again, I stipulate this is quite roughly worked out, but it's around about £400 per taxpayer per year goes on drug policy alone. So once you realise that actually we've all got a tax that we're literally paying to keep this failed policy above, is the fiscal argument going to cut it? Do you think more people are going to be interested when they know it's in their pocket?
Right. So I said this to Liz Bonham the other day. We were discussing single-use plastic and we're talking about the environment. I said, right, no one's learning here what is happening in the world, right? The climate change movement keep on telling us how we're all going to die, right? It's too hard for us to grasp. We're going... Christ, everything, like, so we're all trying our hardest to stop single-use plastic and stuff, and and we all want to go electric cars, and everyone's going, what can I do, but no one really cares. It's not, we're all that fear thing, policy through fear is just, or describe it through fear is not working. I said to her the other day, it's like, you need to paint a beautiful future for us. So that is what Brexit did, and that is what Trump did. They went with optimism, while the other side were going, Remain were going, oh, if you do it, the whole world, Britain's going to collapse and you're all going to be crap and on the streets, right? And Trump is like, make America great again. And Clinton's going, if you vote for Trump, you'll be mass unemployment or whatever. It's the wrong way about doing it. And I think with this, the way we need to sell it to my parents, not so much my kids, but my parents, is like, your life will be better because crime will come down. there'll be less money on police. The police will be able to look after your streets again, how you want them to be, not just going around chasing drug dealers constantly and doing drug stuff. They'll be able to, you know, they'll be able to redistribute the wealth so it's better. You can, if someone actually breaks into your house, they'll care. At the moment, they probably don't have the resources to do that sort of stuff. If you start painting a picture, which is a nice picture, the kids will be healthier. There'll be nicer people on the streets. The economy will grow, la-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then also throw in the, and by the way, we're kind of quite big in the cannabis industry. Whenever I tell that to people, they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, we're doing well. And aren't we also funding the cannabis industry with our city? Haven't they come over here for financing it? Aren't the city brokers and the city boys doing it all?
It's become a weird tapestry. Yeah, not all, you know, this is the next step. Is that there's inevitability now that cannabis is going to be, and I use the word legalized in quotation marks, but it's going to happen now because it's North America's done it and it's trickling over here. But the conversation we now need to have is, how do we want that to look? So do we want that to go down another alcohol route of marketing and big corporations? Or do we want to have more of a social approach where we allow smaller people to get involved and a foothold? So that is the next conversation. And do you think we're remotely primed to have that yet in a outside of this office that we're recording in?
It feels like the time is rife for total drug reform so that we don't end up with cannabis becoming like alcohol. We need it all to sit pretty much. We need to bring alcohol down towards, you know, we need to probably prevent the marketing of alcohol as much, don't we? Even though otherwise we're just going to end up with that. It's so hard for me to get my head around this though, because I'm just thinking about, oh, it's a really hot day. I'm sitting in this office, really hot day, and I'm just thinking about the what do you call those things? Pouring a pint of lager. Oh, yeah.
the draft beer.
The draft beer and the way they make them all wet. And so, yeah. And I just think it's so amazing how they do that, and the glasses and everything else. And so, you know, clearly anyone who gets their hands on this industry is going to want to market it and sell it to you to make you want to buy it like that. But they shouldn't really be able to commercialize it, should they? I don't think.
Well, I think that you're kind of, I've not primed you for this at all, but I think you're totally on board with what my position is that, again, is you do need to look at marketing. I don't drink myself because it has a horrible effect on me. But when you have got a perspective of seeing what the drinking culture is like, it's bizarre. It's just so ingrained in society.
Yeah.
Everything revolves around it. You go to reception, oh, here's your free bubbly. It's like, I don't drink, but thanks.
Well, since I've had my realization, my rethinking on drug reform, I find alcohol so bizarre that whatever occasion it is, because I always swap it with, like, I don't know, something, MDMA or Coke, yeah. Or, you know, hey, welcome to the wedding. Just grab yourself a line before you go in. Yeah. It's like, it's so bizarre how one's so legal and one's so illegal. It's just, now you look at it, it's like we're marking every occasion with a drug. And yet in my mind, drugs are so evil. And I still struggle to cross over, to not think they're all evil and killing the planet, even though I've listened to all the arguments, because I've been so brainwashed. I mean, I'm totally on board, don't get me wrong. But sometimes I slip and think, oh my God, like on the way here, I was thinking, am I doing the right thing doing this podcast? Because it's so alien to people to think that reforming the drug laws is a good idea.
That's why I like to think I'm fairly sensitive to those positions, because it's only been the last, I think since about 2008, that again, I had that kind of journey that you had of, hang on a minute, this doesn't seem right. And then started learning more about it. So you do have to be sensitive to people's positions of, no, all drugs are bad, keep them illegal. It's got some degree of sense in it, isn't it?
I think what we've got to do is look at those poor parents who had the child who had the cannabis, who they want to, I don't really know, you probably know more than me, or what they got stopped at the airport and they had cannabis and it's helping their poor child. And has it run out now? I think it might have run
out. So we had two cases that were high profile, which was Alfie Dingley and Billy Caldwell, and both are struggling to now get their supplies.
So we're all looking at that. I think any nice, sensible person, actually, I'm using the wrong word there, nice, because we've all been so brainwashed, so, you know, in what we think of these drugs. So there'll be people sitting there going, but if you open that loophole, then everybody will be ripping their faces off after smoking cannabis. But, you know, sensible people have done a bit of research and looked at these drugs. They'll think, why the hell can't those parents get those drugs to help that child? I mean, it's nuts, you know. You wouldn't stop morphine, would you? Isn't there heroin and opium in the operating theatre still?
Oh, yeah. The opiate scale is quite vast. Yeah, you go into any operation, you're going to have an opiate of some sort that's going to cause you pain or sedate you in some sort of way. And that's a good example, is that we've, and as you said from the neurosurgeon, we've differentiated between good and bad drugs. But they're just inanimate objects, is how we ingest them and how they deal with them. And just before you came in here, we spoke to Niamh Eastwood, because we're in Release's offices. And Niamh pointed out that the reason that this neurosurgeon hasn't potentially got as much knowledge as what he could have is because of the scheduling of drugs. So in this country, we've got a Schedule 1, which means of no medical value, which means you can't research them. Hence, we are so behind in what we could potentially be doing with new research. And yet no one really knows or cares about this. Do you think that's going to have any resonation?
Yeah, I do. I think that's one of the ways it's going to be. I'm so ignorant of drugs. I don't know one drug from the other. It's ridiculous. But, well, it's not ridiculous at all. So there's no need to, is there? That's why I don't know them. But I think as soon as we start thinking they're going to be used for medical purposes, that's how America are doing it, isn't it? They've legalized acid, haven't they?
In Denver, they've just decriminalized psilocybin for residents, which is a massive step.
Hasn't one of them said MDMA as well?
I think things are coming in the purposes. MDMA stakes. Yeah, again, it's one of those ones that people are starting to realize that A, there's therapeutic purposes,
yeah,
especially for treatment, resistant depression and alcoholism, which is actually a subject we could probably get into with some of the knowledge that's in this country. We've got someone called Dr. Ben Sessa that's doing a lot of work on this. Professor David Nutt does a lot of work on this. And also how psychedelics can help palliative care as well. There's a lot of research and early research within that of how end of life can be eased with psychedelics as well. And again, we've not really delved into these subjects because of what the drug laws create.
Yeah, I listened to David Nutt on the radio years ago and thought, wow, he's really out there.
Yeah, at the time he was definitely seen as radical, and that was he was sacked from the ACMD because of his harm scale. He told the truth about the harm scales of drugs. He said, well, actually, that one's not as bad as you think, and alcohol's the bad one. And the government didn't like it, so they showed him the door. And it's the same with the person you just met, Niamh Eastwood. She wasn't allowed on the ACMD because of her criticism of this
policy. What's the ACMD?
So it's the Official Advisory Council. So it's the Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs that are there to give the government and the Home Office advice on how they should handle drugs. Trouble is that the government historically tends to want to hear what they want to hear. So when they do have an expert like Professor David Nutt or Niamh Eastwood that says, actually, this policy is doing harm, they tend to get shown the door and not being listened to on the advice. And this is all another element that most people have no idea on. And it's cherry picking. It's cherry picking at the absolute antithesis of that paradigm. And yet we're doing nothing about it. Do you think that, again, that could have any resonation with people, domestic people? That sounds completely wrong. But people in your circles, do you think they can grasp that and think, actually, something's gone a bit wrong there?
You know what is the big thing which is happening, I think, in this country, is podcasting, which could make a huge difference. I tell you why. It's if you're BBC Radio and one of the presenters said, hey, let's do a thing on drug reform, they go, oh, let's not touch that. Everyone's just going to come on and say no, you know. I mean, they wouldn't invite me onto the radio to Radio 1 or 2 or 6 Music or something to talk about drug reform, would they? Actually, they might start doing it now, but they wouldn't originally. And the commercial radios don't want to really touch that sort of stuff. They'll only do it if there's a book out or, you know, something like that. Whereas podcasting, and then you'll get 6 minutes to argue your case, at which point most people will go, you know, they'll be sitting at home going, oh, that's nonsense, you know. It's just, you're just fueling. All you're going to see is loads of drug addicts on the streets. That's all that's going to happen. And I suppose with podcasting, what you've got is you've got, I mean, because I listen to a lot of American podcasts, a load of them, and I'm really interested. Sadly, I've gone down a UFO rabbit hole at the moment, but I listen to a lot of American, because I like the deep, I like the big conversations about, you know, things like, free will and all that sort of stuff. I like all these interesting conversations. So I suppose a podcast comes out now. I have interviewed Peter Blexley on my TV show Sunday Brunch, and you've got a few minutes to cover Hunted and his books and stuff. Suddenly he's on a podcast. I can do an hour, and right at the end of the hour, like a life-changing moment. Oh yeah, and you can legalize drugs, and it's like, what? You know, and that's, you know, been life-changing for me, as in thought-changing, definitely rethinking the whole thing. And it's given, you know, and then it enables me to interview a load of other people, and I'm sort of spreading the word. And I suppose podcasting in its very nature is because the people are discussing things in depth and also will like to discuss these sort of things. I think that's how it can change. The more people who get on board with podcasting, I think that's one of the avenues it can go down.
I completely agree with you on that point, because I mean, that's the whole reason we constructed this, is because I think when we got recommending The Guardian, there was the perfect phrase, which was, it's more than a podcast, it's a tool for social change. And that's why we're doing it, because you being on this podcast means that we get your audience come to us and being interested in this subject. And that is why people of your position that are in the media are so valuable to us. You're now more value to us than the politicians, because we believe that it's got to be a bottom-up reform, and that the politicians, most of them do get it. I think that it is intransience to a certain degree that they're not doing anything about it. So when you get people like you that are willing to speak and willing to learn, you know, willing to go, actually, 5 months ago I was in this position and now I'm thinking this, we genuinely can't thank you enough for doing that. It's everything that we need. Do you reckon we can get more people like you on here?
No one ever does anything without any incentive, do they? That's the problem. That people always do stuff if there's something in it for them.
There's a free pack of cards.
I mean, I'm doing it because I like it, and I think it's important. And I think it's, I mean, I don't just think it's important for this country. I think it can change the world. Literally think it's changed. It will change the world and make the world a better place. I think it's the one thing we can all do. You know, I'm thinking about climate change, hugely important. Nuclear energy, massive discussion point, obviously, always, because of its very nature. Global taxation, huge, because of the way these companies are operating now. And drug reform, absolutely massive, as in it'll change politics around the world. The political shifts around the world will be absolutely huge by just getting good drug reform around there, and I think it'll make the world a better place. I really do. I genuinely think that. So, you know, so I'm willing to come out here and start you know, flying the flag for you over here. But I think we're gonna have to take the lead from America, aren't we?
Yeah, well, in one sense they're leading, and in another sense we are. I think we're going to probably do better on heroin, because they're still facing an opiate crisis, they're not really doing much about. And we're very much acknowledging now that we're at an all-time drug deaths in this country. So bizarrely, we could probably lead on heroin, but they're going to start leading on cannabis, because the industry's there now.
So for my listeners who will tune into this, they'll be thinking, how the hell are you going to legalize heroin? So do you want to explain the clinics so that they understand how it works?
And this is a conversation that Neve Eastwood and I were just having, actually, because one of the models that you can go with is called HAT, so heroin-assisted treatment. So most people probably have got an idea of going to their local Boots and there's a counter down the end where someone knocks on it and then they get their methadone treatment. It's so sophisticated and integrated, and it's a way of stopping people from robbing houses to fund potentially their need for use of opiates. It's just exactly that process, but with actual heroin. So instead of using methadone, you have prescription grade heroin that people can consume, preferably or autonomously, because one of the things you can't do is restrict people's habits to such a degree that it just leads them back into the black market. So if they can have a control over their own lives and what they're doing, then you can see results. People are going to be stabilised and potentially lead good lives. And I don't want to say good lives because that suggests that any drug use is a bad life. That's not remotely what's being said. But with regards to what's happened in Switzerland, is that, as you said, I think you brought it up, is that when you do have heroin-assisted treatment, crime rates go down because people don't have to rob houses.
In Switzerland, they, as far as I understand it, they go into a clinic, they take it on site, and then they leave. But they have to take it on site.
So that's another point that conjoins, is that what we also advocate is drug consumption rooms or safe injections facilities or overdose prevention sites, whatever terminology you prefer.
But nobody ever questions, as far as I can see it, nobody ever questions them and their addictions, but always offers the opportunity for them to have therapy or help of some description and talk it through. And as far as I understand it, in Switzerland, 80% of people are coming off heroin because that's generally what they want. They want to be treated as am I using the right word here? Maybe more of a patient than a criminal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So imagine your first entry into a service is how we do it here at the moment. So you may get arrested because of being in possession of heroin. So your entry into a service is potentially prison. Or you go the other route. Someone's first entry into services is a clinic where they're given heroin as a prescription. And then you've got all of these services that can join with it, that you can get therapy, you can get mental health services, you can get even social services, like if you're struggling with home and things like that. All of them are there at your disposal as well. So it's, what way would you want someone that's got potentially an addiction? Do you want them to go to prison, or do you want them to get the services that can potentially get them a life that they want for themselves? It's a pretty simple equation. So when you say legalize heroin, it's quite a misnomer in a way, because you're not actually legalizing anything in the sense of, look, there's a free-for-all, because that's what quite often people hear with legalize. What you're saying is actually there's far more options for the patient to get more help if we just give them health-based services.
Heroin's legal anyway, isn't it, over here? It's not illegal. You need doctors, if they get the rights, can prescribe it. They just don't give them any.
So it's quite complicated. So we had a doctor called Dr. Strang that did the British system, which was heroin-assisted treatment. And heroin is basically just diamorphine, but kind of a brand name. It was by Bayer, who patented heroin. So it's what you can also talk in terms of is morphine, diamorphine, and that whole kind of opiate scale. We always just term it in terms of heroin, though, because it's what we associate with the Trainspotting generation and things like that. So if we just kind of try and get ourselves out of that mindset of what heroin is, as you said, like a folk devil of that, oh, it is the Trainspotting generation. It is what people out there that are homeless that are obviously using heroin. It's just the marketing term that's been added retrospectively to social situations.
It's just such a horrific idea, though, isn't it, to stick a needle in your arm and start shooting up heroin. I suppose you've got to ask the question how you get to that place in the first place.
Exactly. And
I think we just assume ignorance. My ignorance is you just assume that it was just a party which kept going until you end up there. Whereas often it can be, no, the life is so miserable, I started smoking it and I end up doing that for that. I don't know. I'm not educated enough on it, however, or informed enough on it. But I do think that people probably don't want to be heroin addicts.
And it's, there's a lot that goes with what you just said as well, is that you can smoke heroin. Obviously, you can do it off a foil. But the chances are that how someone ingests their drugs is reliant on social circumstances as well. So a lot of times, if you are thinking that you're in risk of prosecution, you may consume very, very quickly just so you're not caught in possession. And that's where, again, intravenous use can come into it, because you can just shoot it all in and then just get rid of it and there's no vapor trail. So simple things like that, the law actually creates more harm because it makes people do riskier behavior. And yet we don't, again, discuss this rationally. We just think in terms of heroin's bad and that's it.
What we need is for someone like me to do a documentary on this, really, don't I?
See, that's exactly what we've been trying to
do. I wonder if a TV company would touch it. It's an interesting thought, because I'm sitting here thinking, I'd quite like to learn more about this, because...
we really do need that. We need that fact-finding that so people can have this explained.
Go to America and see what they're doing over there, and you know, in Switzerland.
And meet people, because all well and good us having this conversation, but we're essentially speaking for people. Mm. There are so many people out there that are eloquent and intelligent that happen to use heroin. They have a voice, and they should be allowed to have their voice.
Why do they use it? Because they just like it, or
there's going to be lots of different reasons. And so we know people that have had childhood trauma that's just mental health has just failed them, so therefore they've gone into routes of self-soothing. And then you've got other people that have just flippantly tried and then gone, actually, I'm struggling to handle this now, and have ended up in a kind of a pattern. It's just as nuanced as life itself.
Are there people who want to stay on it because they just think it's the greatest way to live your life?
There will be people that enjoy it. And again, it's if you've had medical grade opiates of quite a high dose in hospital, then you probably know that opiates can be quite nice.
That morphine.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, and pethidine.
Yeah,
and
it's kind of an interesting feeling, isn't it? Yeah.
So there are people that go, actually, I'm okay using this. And there are certainly people that can, it's a horrible description, but what you call functional addicts that are completely normal, just so happens, instead of having a drink, they'll use this. They exist.
Are you at all worried that, I'm interviewing you now.
It's all rolled.
Are you at all worried that if we did legalize everything, that everyone would be going, come on, what are we doing tonight? Are we doing heroin, or are we doing morphine? Are we doing MDMA? Where are we going? What are we doing? What's the drug of choice today? Are you worried about that?
There's been no evidence to suggest that. So prime example, we always cite the Home Office's very own research that came out about 5 years ago, and it compared all drug laws throughout the world, and it was called the International Comparators Report. And it found that there is no association between the harshness of a country's drug laws and the rates of use. Most people don't factor in the law with regards to what they consume. There's so many other factors for a person. And this is backed up. There's a study today that's just found that teen use in states that have got legal cannabis haven't gone up. If anything, they've kind of plateaued a bit. Same in Switzerland, you had heroin-assisted treatment. Didn't mean to say people then go, oh, actually, I want to find out what this is about. It just doesn't work that way. Human behaviour is so much more complex than what we think the arbitrary law is all about. So thankfully, the evidence is there supporting our case that if you do have reform, levels of use don't go up. But the other factor that I have to put in on that is if rates of use do go up, but people are safer because they've got safer sources, it's cutting out organised crime, does it matter that we potentially would have an uptick in use? The last question I think I'm going to ask you, if we were to have this conversation again in 5 years' time, where do you think you'll be personally within this topic? And also, where do you think we'll be internationally as a policy?
Right. I'm going to answer that question, but just go back one stage. I was thinking about your documentary. What you really need to do is you need to try and get someone populist like a Jamie Lang or someone like a reality star. If you get them, they'll make a documentary. I mean, they might do it with me, but you get populists going, that they'll go, wow, that's the meeting of populists. Yeah. You know, that generation of Love Island type reality stars meets drug reform, which is so surreal. I think, by the way, I was just thinking with my producer's head on, I was thinking that's such a surreal combination that might work, but you'd have to find one who actually bought into the idea, not just for fame, but actually to get it. Where will I be in 5 years' time on this? Well, hopefully I'll still be supporting you, but hopefully we will be closer, and hopefully I won't be the lone celebrity voice. I'm not sure I am the lone celebrity voice, but you know, I don't think there's that many of us are there who are talking.
There's a lot of you that are willing to back us up in a private conversation, but to get someone like you here having this conversation is a different matter.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll get more people doing that. If you are a celebrity and you're listening to this, get your ass in here, because we need to spread the word as much as possible, and we'll just do your research on it. Look into Neil Wood's books, and you know, try and speak to, and Johan Hari's books. They're amazing. They're all about it, and they just explain it all so well. And then what was the other question?
Where do you think we'll be internationally as a policy? Do you think we'll get any kind of reform?
I do. I think it's going there. I keep saying to my friends as a joke, right, we need to get into the drug business. I need to become a drug dealer. And then we go, why? And I said, because I think it's going to happen. And the reason why I think it's going to happen, if someone like me can change my mind, where I was so, you know, like, I don't do drugs because I'm on TV. You know, that is the fundamental reason I lose my job. So I'm sort of kind of anti the idea, and my friends don't do them around me. I'm not saying my friends do drugs, but if they did, they don't do them around me. So it's like because of that, because it's such a volatile subject, you know, it could ruin my career. So for someone like me to completely change my mind on it, and it wasn't hard. It really wasn't hard. It was reading a book, listening to Peter Blexley, reading a book, interviewing Neil Woods, interviewing Johan Hari. It's completely changed my mind on it. I think also politicians will be looking over the pond, and they'll be looking at Switzerland, and they'll be looking at that, and they'll thinking, you know, we could gain some ground here, you know. And as soon as someone thinks, it only takes a couple of them to come out and sort of say, oh, I think we should be legalizing drugs, but a couple of the real big popular ones, or drug reform is a good idea for the country. And when, you know, our politics is in such a mess at the moment, you know, who are you going to vote for out of that lot? There's going to be some politicians who come along soon, because it's such a mess at the moment, I think, with both all the parties. I think there'll be some politicians who come along soon, and I think they'll be looking for new ideas and new policies. And I think if you can, as I say, if you can paint a good picture rather than just the bad, if you can make a better police force because they're not wasting all their time on drugs, safer streets, you know, better for our children, cleaner environment, those sort of things, you know, and I think people will start coming on board with that. I feel very positive about it, but I do know from spending my time on Twitter reading it how totally and utterly brainwashed we all are. So it's a big ask, but I think it can happen.
Thank you so much, Tim. You are absolutely fantastic. I hope we do more with Tim, because he is the voice that just keeps on giving. I left that largely unedited. Just took out a little bit about wrestling, because I'm a wrestling fan, Tim isn't, and that was quite an interesting little 5-minute discussion. I'll keep that for the director's cut. But yeah, I hope we do more with him. And while we're on the thank you to John Harris at the Distraction Pieces Network, who does so much for us. Thank you to Scoobius Pip for having us on the network, giving us the boost. There's new shows on the Distraction Pieces Network, so make sure you check out all of them. There's some brilliant ones. There's some massive ones as well, like the huge, great podcasts that have really taken off globally. Thank you to My Name Is Ad for the artwork. Thank you to Nikki, Tristan and John for all the producing work you do, especially Nikki. Nikki is the biggest workhorse. He looks like Kelly Loggins and we love him. Thank you so much, Nikki. You are a genius. And you, the listeners, we cannot do this without you. And please, if you like any of these discussions, share them on, put them in the other ears, because that's what we need. Drug law reform doesn't stop at this podcast. It needs to get out there. So if you're interested in this subject, please give us feedback. Tip us off on guests. Put this in other people's pockets. This is what we need to do. Thank you so much for listening. Keep tuned, keep subscribed, keep following us on the social media channels at Lit UK, because there's so much more to come. There really is. We've got a lot coming on this podcast. And thank you, and I'll see you later. Bye bye. Behind your barricades. Yeah, but how long can I stay? Behind your barricades. Where true values seldom stray.